You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Coming up tonight at 7, it's Ken Rudin's Political Junkie. Tonight, the horror of the terrorist attacks in Orlando has led to the inevitable finger-pointing and partisan political rhetoric. Elizabeth Zechmeister, a political science professor at Vanderbilt University, talks about how Republicans and male candidates often benefit. That's tonight at 7 on Ken Rudin's Political Junkie.
First, for the men who have ultimately become president, they have one crucial factor in common. They're all fathers, either biologically or through adoption.
And according to our next guest, their time in the Oval Office with their children in tow can say a lot about how the president approaches governance at home and nationwide.
Joshua Kendall is with us now to look at presidential fathers at the start of this Father's Day weekend. He's the author of First Dads, Parenting and Politics from George Washington to Barack Obama. Joshua, welcome to Central Time.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
What made you want to look at this particular relationship between fathers, and it is fathers at this point, all fathers, and their children?
My last book was called America's Obsessives, and I profiled seven American icons who were control freaks. And I started with Thomas Jefferson. I did Henry Heinz, the ketchup guy, and Steve Jobs. And in my Jefferson chapter, I learned that there was a disconnect between how he led the country and how he led the family. He was an amazing leader. He's elected by 75% of the vote in 1804. But as a dad, he was a control freak, and he made life difficult for his daughters. He told them what to do, what to wear. He made lists for them. And then that just brought up the whole question about how one leads a family and what skills are involved in that and whether those are the same skills with leading a country. Often, I did find that the private and the public man was different. Franklin Roosevelt and Ronald Reagan were both great communicators with the nation, but they couldn't communicate so well with their own children. But sometimes the dad and the president are the same. John Adams, I call him a tiger dad. He was very tough with his kids, and he was also tough with the nation. He gave us the Alien and Sedition Acts. And sometimes dads are sweet with their kids and also try to connect with their nation. Our current president, Barack Obama, falls into that category, as does Harry Truman and James Monroe, the author of The Era of Good Feeling, back in the early 19th century.
It's a fascinating area to look at, and you argue that, you know, these days we boil down presidential character or fitness to whether or not a president has been faithful or has had any extramarital affairs, and you say that this is actually another pretty rich vein to look at when you really want to understand someone and their character.
Right, because children are sort of more help, you know, especially today, women have a lot more power and they can do what they want. And it's sort of, it's a meter of how the president deals with people without a lot of power. And I just found the one touching scene, James Garfield, not a very well-known president, our 20th president, was very concerned about the rights of blacks after the Civil War. And he's assassinated in 1881, but he also was such a sweet dad, and the two kind of went together. You know, blacks in that era were, you know, it was just after slavery, and they had absolutely no power. And Garfield, you know, really wanted to help them, and it's so sad because then Jim Crow comes in. But he also was very sensitive to his adolescent kids. One of them was having a romantic relationship, and his wife was very nervous, and Garfield, you know, really understood the kid and said, you know, nothing to worry about. This is just part of growing up. And just that connection and how they experience connection really tells you a lot about how they're going to view some larger issues.
Right. And you break it down into three different types of presidential dads. There's the authoritarian, not to be confused with the authoritative, and then the preoccupied dad. Can you tell us just an overview of who you found in some of those categories?
Yeah, the most common category is the preoccupied. These were men who were thinking about obtaining and using power all the time. LBJ famously said, "I think about politics only 18 hours a day." And so he really didn't have much time for his daughters, and his daughters really liked him and wanted to spend more time with him. So Lyndon, as a teenager, Lyndon Johnson, his elder daughter, started downing the congressional record. She figured that if she knew about legislation before Congress, her father would pay more attention to her. And another example is Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter, we remember Amy from the 70s, but Jimmy Carter actually had three elder sons, and his son Jack said that, you know, dad is one track, you know, dad is totally driven, and that's the standard path to get to the White House, is to be preoccupied. And then the authoritative dads are the nurturing dads, and those are dads that can really negotiate with their kids. But the authoritarian kind of boss them around, and the preoccupied often are absentee dads. Richard Nixon, when he was a young senator, would sleep in his Senate office. And in 1960, he loses the election to Kennedy, and his wife says, okay, now you're going to have more time for me and the girls. And Nixon immediately takes on a bunch of projects, including the book Six Crises, and he's just never around for his children. So the story isn't good overall. USA Today, in its review, said father knows best, except maybe when he's president. I left a copy for President Obama when I was in Washington, and I called him, you know, one of the best first dads. But then I added, though, as you will note, the competition isn't particularly keen. And by and large, these were men who really put family life on the back burner, as you might expect. Given how ambitious they were.
Well, let's talk about President Obama. He's one of your top dads, a nurturing dad, and you say he's an example of an authoritative parent, which is a good thing in your book. And here he is speaking candidly about his daughters on the show Ellen.
Both my daughters are wonderful people, and Malia's more than ready to leave, but I'm not ready for her to leave. And yeah, I was asked if I would speak at her graduation, I said, absolutely not, because I'm going to be sitting there with dark glasses, sobbing. She's one of my best friends, and it's going to be hard for me not to have her around all the time.
Yeah, he sounds like he's all in with his daughters there. In a way, though, I mean, hasn't the notion of what a good father is, hasn't that changed over the years? In a way, is it fair to compare Barack Obama to John Adams?
Yes. The book also documents the evolution of fathering. And yes, I mean, the nurturing dad is partly a 21st century creation. But what's so interesting is that I did find some sweet dads back in the 18th century. I talked about how Thomas Jefferson was very demanding, but his fellow Virginian, James Madison, was very sweet with his two daughters, and whenever he went to Paris or went away from Virginia, he took them with him, as opposed to Jefferson. What's so interesting about Obama is that Obama never knew his own father or rarely saw his own father. He really sees him only twice. His father leaves Hawaii when Obama's a couple of months old. And then his father comes back one Christmas for a few weeks. And Obama fathers just as he was mothered. The most important influences on him developmentally were his mother and grandmother. So it's often been said that Bill Clinton is the first black president because he has a knack for connecting with African Americans and he liked to go speak in churches. But on some level, Barack Obama is kind of our first female president. I mean, emotionally, his style is he's a connector, and you could hear in that clip just how attached he is to his girls. And if you think about it, the verb fathering literally is often used just to procreate. It's not really used in terms of taking care of children, and I think that's changing. But as you say, historically, in John Adams's era, being a provider was basically all you were supposed to do. And if you were like James Monroe, that was gravy, but that wasn't part of the equation. So things are changing, and Obama is a new type of dad, but it has something to do with his own history. Another sweet dad was Rutherford B. Hayes, elected in 1876, and Hayes also never really knew his own father. In Hayes's case, his father dies a couple of months before he is born, so he too fathers as he was mothered. So Hayes was a nurturing dad, you know, back in the 19th century, and Hayes was also a Civil War general, and he was just very tender with his soldiers, and if a soldier was dying, he would make sure that his last words get sent to his lover or, you know, girlfriend or fiance or whatever, just a very sweet man. And Hayes is actually the person behind the Easter egg roll at the White House. Oh. He was very sweet to his kids and also very sweet to Washington, the kids of Washington, D.C., And one day in 1878, he's taking a walk near the White House, and a street urchin comes up to him and says, "Sir, can we roll our eggs on your lawn?" And Hayes says, you know, he loves kids, and he says, "Okay, let's do it." And today that's the biggest event in the White House every year. Some 30,000 kids show up on Obama's lawn. They now have to go through an email lottery. There's so much interest. But that was part of Hayes' sweet nature back in the 19th century.
Joshua Kendall is joining us now. He's a journalist and biographer. We're talking about his most recent book. It's called First Dads, Parenting and Politics from George Washington to Barack Obama.
And we want to hear from you. What characteristics do you think make good presidents and parents? Does it matter to you if world leaders are good parents? Or do you think presidents have to choose between ambition and being a good father? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email your comments to talk@wpr.org.
You're listening to Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're continuing our conversation about the intersection of the presidency and parenting, and we want to hear from you. Do you think that good parents make good national leaders, or does country trump family? Let us know what you think. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email your comments to talk@wpr.org.
We're continuing our conversation now with biographer and journalist Joshua Kendall. His new book is called First Dads, Parenting and Politics from George Washington to Barack Obama. And let's take our first caller. We've got Aaron on the line in Baraboo. Aaron, hi.
Theodore Roosevelt is a presidential dad. He was a very strong president, brought America into the imperial age, but he still seemed like a very tender, loving dad, always playing and wrestling around with his kids and playing lots of games in the White House. And I want to know what your author thinks of Theodore Roosevelt as a presidential dad.
Yeah, Aaron, thank you so much for bringing that up, because Theodore Roosevelt, I gather from your book, had a big family and also basically a menagerie living in the White House with a pony and a monkey, and he's got a pretty full family. What was he like as a father?
Yeah, actually, they had to build the West Wing, the office building in the White House, because the family quarters were so stocked with all those animals. Yeah, I describe Theodore Roosevelt as a playful pal, and as the caller says, that was the primary way that he connected with his kids, and sometimes he would stop work at 3 o'clock and go into the White House attic and play tag with one of the sons. But there's also a slightly darker side to Theodore Roosevelt as well, and that's one of the things that I try to do in this book, is just capture all the sides of presidents, and that's really, you know, my job as a biographer is to capture all the sides. And Theodore Roosevelt had this really warm, fun-loving side, which was definitely a core part of him, but he also had a kind of obsession with war, because his big claim to fame was being a hero in the Spanish Civil War on San Juan Hill in 1898, and he sort of thought his sons should do the same. And when World War One comes in 1917, Theodore Roosevelt is about 55, and he's overweight, and he walks into President Wilson's office and says, "I want to go lead a volunteer troop in France." And Wilson says, you're a little too old for that. But Roosevelt says, "Okay, my sons are going to take over for me." And he really pushes his sons to go to war. And then he gets a little bit carried away, and he wants them all to be heroes, and a couple of them get injured, and his youngest son, Quentin, dies, shot down by a pilot in 1918. And then Roosevelt really sort of catches himself in this, "Oh, my God, what have I done here?" And it's so sad. Roosevelt dies 6 months later of a broken heart, and he was actually thinking of making a political comeback. There were no term limits in those days, and he was only about 60, and he may well have run for office in 1920 again if he hadn't died. And I also have a whole chapter on presidential grief. So just as Theodore Roosevelt didn't run for office in 1920 because of the loss of a child, these losses have affected other presidents, and also loss has affected this election. I wrote a piece for the New York Times in October about Joe Biden.
Right.
Joe Biden would have been running against Hillary Clinton this spring if he hadn't suffered a loss. So I just try to capture all the sides of family life and to show that presidents are like the rest of us and that they experience some of the same stresses.
And Joshua, just briefly, because I want to get right back to our callers, but you do say that presidential children, on a large part, seem to be kind of unlucky. It seems clear, based on your research, that this is not the easiest thing to be the kid of a president, and oftentimes they don't meet with the happiest endings.
Yes, historian Michael Beschloss has talked about the curse of the presidential child. Particularly in the 19th century, there are all kinds of tragedies. Franklin Pierce loses his third and only surviving son in a horrible train accident. Willie Lincoln dies about a decade later, Abraham Lincoln's young son. A couple of the Adams children die from alcoholism. So there's a lot of sadness, particularly in the 19th century. In the last half century, the presidential children have done better. Chelsea Clinton is doing well, and the Bush twins are doing well. But in the 19th century, it used to be felt that it was a disadvantage to be the child of a president.
Let's take a caller from La Crosse now. Jeff is with us. Hi, Jeff.
Afternoon. I guess my comment is that the presidency and that job, that position, is at least a 36-hour-a-day job to begin with. And for a president to be able to make the time to be with his children, to me, is outstanding. Most business people can't do that nowadays, and to be the president and be able to do that, I think that's great.
Jeff, thanks for that. Appreciate that. So maybe a modern president should be part of the toolkit that they find time in their lives and their daily schedules to spend time with their children. Do you think, Joshua, that there's any sort of modern mental health advice to presidents to spend time with their families?
It's a very complicated and kind of gut-wrenching issue because obviously on a human level, it's extremely important both for the president and obviously for the children. But I spoke with Susan Eisenhower, Ike's granddaughter, and she said that the presidency is like a combat zone because, after all, the president is responsible for the welfare of 300 million people, and maybe on some level he has to make the sacrifice. And she said, well, maybe Obama, and she's made that argument, as have some other people, that maybe Obama is too good a father. It's not to say that it isn't terrific that he does that, but he has this tremendous responsibility. And again, it's gut-wrenching, and there are no right answers. But he's also kind of been criticized. Remember, I said that LBJ was working on politics all the time, and LBJ wouldn't have dinner with his daughters but would be twisting arms and having drinks with senators. And Obama has kind of been criticized for that. And I guess it's part of this national conversation about, what is sensible work-life balance, and arguments could be made every which way. And in my book, I just try to talk about the patterns that various presidents have set up. But Obama has determined that he's going to eat dinner five nights a week with his girls, and he has very strict boundaries about that. And on one hand, it's very lovely. On the other hand, he's also been criticized for it, and there's just no way to know what is absolutely right, and all one can do is think about the various issues involved.
Of course, it's early in the election season, middle of the election season, but do we know anything about Donald Trump as a father and also Hillary Clinton as a mother?
Yeah, I've actually studied them a lot in the last few months, and I've written a couple of pieces for Politico and other places, and I interviewed one of the Trump children, Eric. And I think this election is in some ways a rejection of Obama. I think that Americans really respect him as a father and are very moved by how connected he feels with his girls. At the same time, both Democrats and Republicans alike are a little frustrated with him. Democrats, because he hasn't done more to stand up to Republicans and hasn't gotten more legislation passed. And Republicans feel that he's a little too nice. Republicans feel that he's given away the store to Cuba or to Iran. And I guess both Trump and Hillary Clinton are back to the preoccupied. I mean, Hillary comes in, she would be the first mom, but her parenting style is pretty male. It's not so nurturing. It's kind of like Franklin Roosevelt or LBJ. She's a very serious person. And the same with Donald Trump. And Donald Trump has always connected with his children through work. His three adult children and the three kids in their 30s are all vice presidents of the Trump Organization, just as Chelsea Clinton is the vice chair of the Clinton Foundation, whereas Obama, a more nurturing dad, would really encourage, you know, the daughter, he's encouraging his daughters to do whatever they want to do. And if it's not in politics, he would really be fine with it. Malia has expressed an interest in becoming a filmmaker. So I think both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are back to the preoccupied, and I think it has something to do with the frustration with Obama as a little too soft a leader from both sides of the aisle.
We leave it there. Joshua, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
Joshua Kendall is a biographer and a journalist, and he joined us at the start of this Father's Day weekend to talk about the presidents and their very real roles as parents and what that says about their character. His new book is called First Dads, Parenting and Politics from George Washington to Barack Obama.
I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you.